Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Talking Disney Classics podcast. And this is a show where we like to talk about the Disney canon and other films made by the Disney studios. And today we thought for Halloween, for the month of Halloween, for October, it would be fun to look back at the one of the stop motion films that they made in 2012 with Tim Burton. We were talking about Frankenweenie, and I really enjoyed this film. I've always felt like it was a little bit underrated, so it was fun to revisit it, but I'm not here alone. I have with me my friend Jonathan North is here, and thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, so you might be saying, where's Stanford? And he is actually, we can't feel sorry for him because he is out out of the country right now, going on a big cruise to Australia. So it's pretty exciting. Yeah. Big Disney cruise to Australia. So he's going to have a great time. He deserves it. And it should be some good stories and stuff I did get one message and I asked him if they'd watched Wish, if they got like an early screening. No luck. So we have to wait till next month, but it sounds like he's having a great time on his cruise. So
you have to do an update episode when he comes back.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be really fun. But thank you for filling in and for being here to talk about Frankenweenie with me.
No problem. I love Frankenweenie.
Yeah, I think it's really strong. And it was fun to revisit. We watched both the film from 2012 and the original short. And so I think it's going to be interesting to kind of compare the two. And
I hadn't seen the original short yet. I mean, I knew it was out there and I was like, I'll watch it someday. And I just never had. So it was fun to actually finally watch it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because I do Disney Scares Month every year on my channel. And one of the things that I think Disney has done a pretty good job at over the years is introducing kids to all different genres of films, including introducing them to the tropes of certainly your classic horror films. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good, because a kid can't know what they like if they never get a chance to test it out and see it and I had a lot of fun like with that little jump scare or that little sort of the tropes of the genre. Then they never get a chance to kind of develop their personalities into unique people who like different stuff.
Yeah, and you certainly get all the different tropes in this movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So much that I'd forgotten about. It was like, oh, I know what they're referencing there. I know what they're doing here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's why I really like the Toy Story of Terror. Just those little movies made by Disney that, again, kind of introduce kids to... this is what, you know, this is what a scary movie's like. This is what a, you know, this is what a jump scare's like. This is what, the music's like in these kind of movies. This is what, you know, thing. And so I think that both of these are good examples of that. I should really do the short one of these years for Disney Scares Month, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that it was actually a Disney short.
Uh-huh.
I was, for some reason, I was thinking it was another studio, but then I remembered, oh yeah, he made it while he was at Disney. I think didn't he get in trouble for,
yeah,
like, I don't know, wasting resources or something?
Yeah, that's really, it's really interesting. So the original short came out in 1984, and it is a live action short, and evidently he was fired for it because they felt like, according to Wikipedia at least, that he had been wasting company resources and felt the film was not suitable for the targeted young audiences. And it was originally going to be put in with a re-release of The Jungle Book, but then it was included in a re-release of Pinocchio, which does seem like a way better fit to me, Pinocchio.
Yeah, I think so. Pinocchio is a lot closer to horror than The Jungle Book is.
Yeah, like I feel like people that are going to see Pinocchio are more sort of mentally ready for this. You know. And then it says on again on Wikipedia, it says following the success of Burton's later films, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Beetlejuice, Batman, Edward Scissorhands, the film was given a home video release in 1992. It was released as an extra along with Vincent on the Nightmare Before Christmas DVD, Blu-ray, and as well as the 2000 VHS. So once he became profitable, of course. nobody knows how to ride a trend more than Disney, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Burton, he got credit for Disney movies he didn't even make. They were so excited about him. People still think that he was the director of The Nightmare Before Christmas, and he was not. And people think, oh, well, he must have been. No, he was not the writer. he was a producer, and he had the original story idea for Nightmare Before Christmas, but he was not the director.
Yeah, same. I think he has such an iconic style that anything that even remotely resembles him, it's like, oh, that must be Tim Burton, even if it's not.
Well, I mean, and they put it right in the title, Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. So the confusion was understandable. But yeah, I feel bad for Henry Selick. I mean, I feel like even movies like Coraline and James the Giant Peach still somehow sometimes get credited to Tim Burton. Like, he wasn't even involved in those like at all.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever thought of those two as Tim Burton films, but I guess I could see why somebody who isn't as familiar might think that.
I just feel like there's no director that has gotten so little credit for so many iconic films as Henry Selick.
It could be true.
Poor guy, I feel bad for him. But Disney definitely went from not being a fan from firing him to being a big fan and eventually giving him Alice in Wonderland and, you know, all of this. Mm-hmm. We can't feel too sorry for Tim Burton. but yeah, so the 1984 film, I mean, they're basically identical as far as plot and really even what happened, like the scenarios that happen, the scenes.
There was a lot that I was watching. I was like, oh, wow, they really, really just took from the original short.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, me too. And so... it's a simple story about this little boy loses his dog, and his dog dies, and he gets the idea of bringing the dog back to life, and so he does this experiment. Makes the Frankenweenie, and then all chaos chaos results. But overall, what did you think of the short?
I thought it was cute. It ended up going a little darker than I was expecting. Because once I saw Disney at the beginning, I forgot that they went dark in the 80s. And then I wasn't thinking about the fact that they ended up like chastising him and actually firing him.
Yeah.
So when it started getting darker towards the end, I was like, oh, I don't know why I didn't expect this, but okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I still think that to me, it's made... I would feel fine with kids for the most part, unless there was some particular fragility in a child. I would feel fine with them watching this because I think it's all sort of tempered by the emotion, of him losing his dog. And so that I think makes, it's not just going through the motions of like scaring it. You like feel for the characters, which maybe makes it more scary, but like, I don't know. I just feel like there's so many like conversations that you can have and so many things that you can do with it that it doesn't just feel cheap to me, if that makes sense. I think that it would be fine for most kids. Like, I don't think it's too scary.
No, probably not. I think I think I'm more thinking of the darkness of the humans. Like most of the stuff with Frank and Weenie, I didn't think of that as dark, even though, yeah, technically he's
Like the
reanimating a deceased
neighbors.
corpse. The way the neighbors reacted, I think, is what I was feeling as more dark than everything else.
Right. And you're right about the 80s being this sort of dark time for Disney. It, like, literally in the sense, I mean, it was a dark time as far as their box office, but also in the sense of the themes they were exploring at the time. And, you know, you had movies like Watcher in the Woods. You had movies like The Black Cauldron, which would be, I think that's 85 or 86. You had Something Wicked This Way Comes, just these sort of darker themed Return to Oz, which truly did traumatize me. and I'll never forget that hallway of heads.
I never saw that until a couple years ago when I did it for my podcast. I ended up liking it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, it's just too, I do think that one gets into a little, like, it, this one to me doesn't get into like a mean-spirited place because of that heart of you feeling for him losing his dog, and but I do think that that one does, with them literally giving her electroshock therapy, and like, I mean, it's just so mean.
With Return to Oz,
oh my
gosh. It was like they took, like, the Oz books, if taken at face value, are very weird and dark. And it was like they did that. They took the basic ideas out of the story, but then took them to their logical conclusions. Like, this is what's in the book. Isn't this disturbing?
And didn't I have the hope that the original film, the original Wizard of Oz, has, which again, like, that's what I'm saying even about this, is that there's always sort of a hope, a heart, something there that to me keeps it from feeling mean.
Are you a fan of Rachel's Reviews? Do you look forward to Family Movie Night, Female Film Critics Panels, or the Talking Disney podcast? If so, please consider supporting the podcast by becoming a patron. As a patron, you get to access monthly events such as the watch-alongs and Q&As, where you get to talk to stars and find out the behind the scenes of the movie making industry. And you can pick what I review for Family Movie Night, or even become a guest on the podcast. Podcasts and YouTube channels are expensive, and I really, really could use your help. I would so appreciate it. You also get to be a member of the Facebook group where we talk about all the films that we're seeing, and we have so much fun. Go to patreon.com/hallmarkies and select one of the Rachel's fan tiers. That's patreon.com/hallmarkies.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But anyway, it's an interesting time for Disney. They were exploring things and trying, you know, new things, and this would be considered one of them. And it's also kind of interesting that we watched this, you know, the same week as we had this short, you know, the Once Upon a Studio. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch that yet, but
oh yeah, I did.
It was great, and
it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Expecting something very, I don't know, self-congratulatory,
and it was.
It was more about the artists than it was about the studio, which is why
it was about as well done of this kind of thing as you could do.
Yes.
I just feel like you'd have to be like really cynical to be like, oh, that was just a cash grab, you know, like, because there, it's a hundred years. I think it's appropriate to take a look back at our most iconic animation studio, all the characters. I appreciated that they had characters from shorts. They had characters from the only characters that they did not include was the Song of the South characters. They couldn't go that far, which I'm fine, whatever, you know, I'm fine with. But I still
haven't gone over the last scene with a magnifying glass. I'd like to figure out who all is in that. Was Frank and Weenie in that? He should have been.
You know, he wouldn't be animated. Oh, you mean the animated one?
Yeah.
Well, see, so they only did, because they didn't have any Nightmare Before Christmas characters or any, they were only doing Disney Animation Studios. So there was no Pixar.
Was the movie Dinosaur Disney Animation Studios? I thought that was a different studio.
Yeah, that's a canon film.
Okay, I was thinking it was a different studio that had made it. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why they didn't have Frank and Weenie. But anyway, I did appreciate, like, they had characters from the wartime shorts, and they had the some of the Merry Melodies characters, like the skeleton dance and stuff like that. It was fun. So it's kind of appropriate that we're talking about the short the same weekend as this, like, kind of big short, because it's not every day that Disney has like an important short.
Yeah, you don't get very many Disney shorts at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, like I said, it's kind of simple. Basically, you have both of the movies start out with them watching home movies, and both of them are kind of a love letter to cinema, and also the power of kind of creating your own films, and also just a love letter to the Universal monster movies of the 1940s. Say, a
love letter to monster movies, especially like Godzilla type movies.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like Universal horror, Frankenstein, Dracula, mm-hmm. things like that. It was just fun, which is really fun. And so Sparky dies, very sad, and then he's in his science class, and he sees this, that there's still electric energy in this dead frog, is the point of the lecture or whatever. And he gets this idea of, like, maybe he can bring Sparky back to life. And we get this, you know, pretty long sequence of just like in the original Frankenstein movie, you know, with Sparky and lightning and, you know, all the stuff involved. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up, and all of that was really fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was really well done. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. could tell it was very much an homage to other science fiction horror movies from the time period this is supposed to be mm-hmm. representing.
Yeah.
Although I wasn't, like, especially with the live action one, was it supposed to be set in like the 1940s, 50s?
Oh, you know,
because I noticed some things. It was like, if this is supposed to be that time period, there are some anachronisms here.
You know, especially... I am not sure, because it's just kind of, I guess I didn't think about it, because, and it doesn't say on the Wikipedia, I just took it as kind of Tim Burton suburbia, you know, that he likes to do, like in Beetlejuice or in mm-hmm. In Edward Scissorhands, certainly. And, you know, he kind of has this sort of almost like a snow globe version of suburban America. And so, you know what, I'd almost have to watch it again. Definitely had some of that 1950s aesthetic.
Yeah.
But
the first thing that I noticed was a very deliberate Hello Kitty reference with a gravestone that said "Goodbye, Kitty," and then it showed up in the animated version too.
Oh.
But then the neighbor girl had a Hello Kitty poster on her wall. So I was like, well, that would not be in the 1950s.
Interesting. I actually don't know when Hello Kitty started. Do we know when it started?
I think the 80s.
It seems like it, but I'm not up on my Hello Kitty knowledge. but yeah, that it's true. It's kind of a 1980s fantasy suburbia, you know, Tim Burton world. That's how I would take it. But I liked him when he fakes being sick.
1974. Hello Kitty was 1974.
Oh, I had to look it up. There
so
you go.
It's older than I thought.
Yeah. But yeah, so he, Victory fakes being sick, which is like classic. Kids, I don't know if kids could get away with that today like they used to be able to. Parents are too smart.
I don't know.
But we hardly had to fake it at all, because my parents were very, like, Like they would, if we needed a mental health day, they were like, okay, you know, as long as you keep up with your work. My parents were relaxed, I guess, in that, and they ended up homeschooling some of their kids, and not me, well, but
I was homeschooled, yeah. So we, even if I was sick, I couldn't get out of school.
Yeah. but it was I thought kind of a funny scene. And yeah, and then this is the dark part where you have this with Sparky getting out, and he is chased by that neighbor, and and he scares the teenage girl, and they're complaining to the dad and mom, and they're like, what, the dog is dead? What's going on? And I don't know. I'm just like, so not a confrontation person. It would take a lot for me to actually confront a neighbor about their dog. Like,
yeah,
it would have to be really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The dog was not acting in any way that I would think would be worth griping over.
Right.
Just being a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Like it would have to be, like, I'd have to be kind of scared, like, that it was going to attack me or something. I don't know. Even then, I probably would just be like, can I avoid it at all costs? but yeah, so they do. And that's when the dad and mom see Sparky. And they decide to have this party. They make appetizers.
Without the scene, I was like, why are you doing this?
It's not going to end well.
Why even bother telling the neighbors that you've reanimated the dog? Just pretend it's a new dog.
Yeah.
With weird markings.
That probably would have been the way to go, is even just to get a new dog and just saying, oh, this is the dog or something like that. But they invite the neighbors over, and then everything goes terribly. They all freak out. And he spooks the neighbors, and then we get this chase scene to the cemetery, and he gets hit again, and then they try to reawaken him with the cars like they do in the animated film, and you know they can't, and it's just very sad and sweet, and I've never had a dog. Myself, my parent, I mean, my brother and sister were really, really, really allergic. So I've never gone through this experience, but I would think that both of these movies, if you were a dog owner, that would really hit home. Cause I felt like even not being a dog owner, was on both of them, it was very, very sweet and heartfelt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably not even just dogs, like anyone
else. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But I have to say, I think, I agree with you that I just personally prefer the feature film. And I saw some on Letterboxd people saying, oh, you know, it didn't need to be stretched out. They took a, you know, story, made it too long, so it was boring. I saw those kind of things about the 2012 film. But I guess I'm just such an animation lover that to me, the stop motion is just really special. And I
love all the ways they stretched it out.
Yeah, I did too. For the, like, I wasn't bored.
No, it was fun. I love the characters. I love all the monsters that end up coming to life.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I do. I think I prefer the animated film over the short.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
The short was good. I did end up enjoying it.
Me too.
But I really like the animated one.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like the short is kind of like a workshop. It's like a test of the idea, a test of concept, you know?
Yeah.
And then this is the 2012 is the final realization of the idea.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting with Frankenweenie, I feel like, because I don't know, it's just one of those movies that I think because it wasn't a canon release and there were so many animated films in 2012, it just got kind of lost in the shuffle, even though it did get nominated for Academy Award. I just feel like it's one of those films that we could have just as easily done it for obscure animation as doing it for, you know, Talking Disney, because it's just, I think it's one that people just kind of forgotten about, which is a shame.
Yeah, I don't hear a whole lot of people talking about this movie. I've talked about it once in a while with my cousins because we all liked it. We all enjoy it. But not anyone besides us. I don't know the last time I heard anyone reference Frankenweenie other than me and my cousins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a strong year for stop motion animation that year because you had Paranorman, which was, you know, your love letter to zombie, you know, movies. And I love Paranorman. I think it's brilliant. And then Frankenweenie that same year. So that was pretty fun.
I still haven't seen Paranorman. It might be the only Laika film I haven't seen.
Oh, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to watch that one.
I think you'd like it. And I mean, it was an interesting year because you have you had Wreck-It Ralph that year, which, you know, of course, the favorite of many people. And you had Brave and then Rise of the Guardians. And then another stop motion. You had the Pirates the Aardman Pirates movie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I need to watch that again. I saw it once on TV. I haven't seen it since.
It's fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I love Aardman, so.
Yeah, unbelievable. I cannot wait to see the new Chicken Run.
Yeah, me too.
Counting down the days.
I was thinking it was out this month, and then I looked it up. I was like, why haven't I seen it yet?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, not till December? That's disappointing.
Hey, this is Jen Johans, host of the podcast Watch with Jen, which delivers a steady stream of great movie recommendations, thoughtful career deep dives, and first-rate conversations with film critics, authors, actors, journalists, filmmakers, and more. You can find Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts or hear us first at our Patreon at patreon.com/filmintuition.
Yeah, I think this year is going to be a really strong group of Oscar nominated and animated films. I think pretty much it's a lock that it's going to be across the Spider-Verse, of course.
Probably.
Yes. And The Boy and the Heron, I think, is pretty much a lock.
Oh yeah. I hope I'm not holding my breath, but I'm hoping our theater gets that one. They somehow got Suzume. Shocked me to no end. So I'm hoping that maybe there's a chance for The Boy and the Heron, but we'll see.
Yeah, it should get a pretty decent rollout. So I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I can't wait to see it. I'm dying to see it, of course. but yeah, and I think that probably Elemental will get in there. And then we have the big question is Wish good? Is it going to be good? Is it going to, because obviously, like, Strange World didn't get nominated, it wasn't good. What is going to happen with Wish? I think is the kind of the big question, because I feel like Chicken Run is pretty much a lock as well. I would be shocked if I mean, it would just have to be really bad, because the Academy, rightfully so, loves Aardman, loves stop motion. And so I think that's pretty much a lock. And so it's that last spot that I could see. There's a new Ernest and Celestine movie that is absolutely wonderful. And the first one got nominated. So I could see that one's sneaking in there.
I still need to see the first one.
Oh, it's great. Is really just like a hug of a movie. It's so good. And so this one it was an interesting year, and I do think it's gotten kind of lost, but it starts the same as, it has many of the same elements of the short. So in that way, I can kind of see what people are saying, like, was there enough? But I really enjoyed sort of the additional characters that they added. I really like Egregor
Yes. And Atticus Schaefer has such a great voice. I love his voice so much.
Yes, he should be used more, I think, in animation voiceover. He's great.
Yeah, I think he still does some, but not as much as he did when he was little. I think his voice has deepened a little bit, but it's still high enough that he still has a great voice.
Yeah, I think that he and Eden Shear both have great voices. They were both on the middle, and you know, of course, Eden did the
Star versus Star, the Force of Evil.
She's great too. I loved him. I love the girl with she's just named Weird Girl, but the girl with the big eyes.
Apparently Catherine O'Hara did her voice. She played the mom, and I was looking looking for the girl in the credits. I was like, why can't I find this? Because I was like on IMDb.
Yeah.
And finally, I switched over to Wikipedia and looked up her specifically. It was Catherine O'Hara. I was like, oh wow, I didn't realize that Catherine O'Hara had such a range, because she also did the coach.
She did a bunch of characters. She's brilliant.
I never knew that she was such a great voice actress.
I love her. She was Victor's mother, Weird Girl, and then the gym teacher.
She was so good in all of them, and all very different sounding voices.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we should say overall, you know, we've said that you liked it better than the short, but overall, what did you think about the movie?
It's just fun. I love it. Yeah. I love how creative it is. I especially like, I know people talk about how it's padding out the runtime or whatever, but like, I love the monster attack that, like, technically it has nothing to do with Frankenweenie himself, but I love it. Mm-hmm. And I love all the homages to all the classic monsters, and even not so much like the old monsters, but like the sea monkeys, that I'm 99% sure they're supposed to be in Gremlins. The scene with the pool, it just seemed like a scene straight out of Gremlins.
I really enjoyed that too, kind of getting into more than the short, getting into some of those kaiju monster tropes was really fun. And like I said, I think one of the values of this movie is it's a way to introduce kids to all these different tropes and genres of horror and scary movies. And I think you could, as a parent, if you're watching, you could see, oh, so-and-so really liked this scene or this moment, or really liked this character. How can we build upon that? And that's what I mean, I'm sure I would suck, but if I had the chance to parent, that's what I would hopefully do, is look for, okay, there's a sign of something my kid is interested in. Let me find more. Let me see more, you know, that's kind of safe and within their age, you know, age bracket, but, and introduce them to that. And I have to say, my Aunt Chris was really great at this with her kids. And I sure one time, because my parents had almost no interest in like media, they like some like classic music, like going to plays. But my mom was a big reader. My parents just really had, I feel like almost everyone has like a show that they just love, or like a band that they're super into, or just something, you know, that's like their thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But not my parents. They just don't. They just don't. And so it was different with my Aunt Chris, because she was very like conscious of trying to nurture her kids' talents. And I remember one time she came up to me, and she was like, because her kids were a lot, you know, younger than me. And she's like, which one should I introduce my kids to, Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears? I see pros and cons of both. And that was the way that she did things. I think I said Christina just because I felt like she was a little more vocally talented, but I think that's more, I think it's a good approach, you know, to sort of be like, let's try to think about what my kids are interested in and what I can kind of, you can't expose them to everything, and you can't, but you can sort of watch for what they're interested in. And I think a movie like this, there's so many different little touch points that you could introduce kids to different types of movies.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I also loved that they got Martin Landau to voice Mr. Rizkruski. That's obviously, you know, an homage to Vincent Price. That was just really fun, I thought.
In my head, I kept thinking his name was Mr. Rice Krispy. I know that's wrong, but the way that some of the kids pronounced it,
yeah,
it sounded like Mr. Rice Krispy.
Yes. And then we have, and so then we also have Sparky falling in love with the poodle next door. And this is really fun because not only is just like a cute little dog romance, but they like an homage to the Bride of Frankenstein,
mm-hmm.
her hair, you know, and her fur and everything that was fun.
Which I was kind of surprised that came from the original short too, because she showed up at the end of that one.
That's true. That's true. And then I love, like I said, weird girl's big eyes. She's holding whiskers. I loved her. I love Mr. the stop motion.
Whiskers had a dream about you.
Yeah.
I love the way she talks. Catherine O'Hara is so great. She needs to do more voices.
Yes, she does. I just love the stop motion animation. I love the look of it. I love it all feels like you're watching a black and white movie. I think that's mm-hmm. so cool.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where like a lot of people would say, I don't like black and white movies. But like as I was watching this, I forgot that it was black and white. It just, mm-hmm. once you get used to it, it's like, it's just the movie.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because I just reviewed Werewolf by Night on my channel and it was originally in black and white and it had such a cool aesthetic and it was so different, but now they're releasing it this month in color. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Like, I don't know that I would like it in color. Special. Part of the reason I ended up liking that so much is because I don't like a lot of blood and gore, and I could tell that if it was in color, it would be a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's that, but it's just like, that was what was unique about it. Like,
yeah, that too.
It's crazy to me. It's like that anybody would see that as an upgrade. It's just bonkers to me.
Yeah.
It's so like bizarre.
When they release those colored versions of I Love Lucy, it's like, we didn't need this. Gross. Lucy was fine in black and white.
It's like I sent the most fiery email I could when they aired on AMC. They aired a Miracle on 34th Street in the colorized version.
I didn't even know there was a, I mean, it shouldn't surprise me. I didn't know there was a colorized version of that. I've just seen it in black and white.
Yeah, well, that's the only way you should see it. Gross. I mean, what makes that especially gross is they don't even get the estate's permission for that. They just do it. Mm. And I think that's especially disgusting. People's, you know, the cinematographers and the directors, they designed it with a particular color palette and a particular, you know, so to just change it and make it look terrible is really gross. Even if it looked great, it's still gross to me. So
a lot of times colorizing doesn't look very good.
No, it looks terrible. It looks like one of those greeting cards where they have like the pastel colors over the black and white.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, it looks so bad. But I hate it.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarkie in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies merch store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anne of Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
Okay, and so I just think it all works really well with the whole setup with Victor just being so sad and you just feel so much for this character. It just hurts your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then he, and then you see how happy he is when he gets brought back, when Sparky gets brought back to life. I feel it.
Yeah. It's
really good. And that whole, again, a whole experiment section is really fun. It just as in the original, it captures that Frankenstein from the Universal Monster movies.
Yeah, they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. And so then Edgar comes over and Victor shows him the dog, and they start testing on different animals, which is fun. The goldfish and all of that.
I love the whole scene. I know what you did. Yeah, I know what you think you know that I know you did.
And you have these parents who are fighting against Mr. Rakruski, and saying Mr. Rakruski says that they're all ignorant and have small minds.
I love the way they set that up, because he says that they're all ignorant, and then he stops like, am I using the right word? And you think, oh, he didn't mean to insult them. He says, no, I mean, you're stupid.
Yeah. And I like, though, he says that people like science, people like what science teaches them, but not when they ask the questions.
So yeah, people I think like that what that's... science can give them, but they don't like asking the questions. Yeah.
I think that's
he really had a lot true. Of good lines in that whole scene.
Mm-hmm,
the first time he showed up, I was like, this is kind of like a weird mad scientist teaching a class. But then that scene, I really liked the character.
Yeah, and I liked that it was funny, the parent who's like, what, Pluto isn't good enough to be a planet anymore?
I wish that people would actually know why Pluto is not classified as a planet. They just say, oh, it's not a planet anymore. It's still the same as it always has been. There are a whole bunch of planets in our solar system that aren't actually planets. They're called dwarf planets. Yeah. There's a planet between Mars and Jupiter, which I never knew about because nobody ever teaches about it. It's called Ceres.
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing. I think that's awesome. And I think it's cool that Pluto is categorized with those other planets or planetoids, dwarf planets. And nobody talks about that. They're just mad Pluto's not a planet anymore. They need to read a book.
Well, yeah, I mean, because every single planet has moons that surround the planets. And
technically, Pluto, they haven't figured out exactly yet. Pluto could be something closer to a twin planet because its moon is almost as big as it is.
Right.
So they kind of revolve around each other, which is even cooler. So talk about that instead of just he's been demoted.
People like fighting for an underdog, even when it's Pluto. But I like that he also says science is here, points to the head, but it's also here and points to the heart. Science is not good or bad, but it can be used both ways, which I think is also true.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, at the same time, I mean, that's one interesting thing about this Oppenheimer, you know, that was basically a theme of that movie, is you have the scientists doing this incredible thing, this historic thing, but obviously it was also led to, you know, great evil, and it could never be that. I mean, in the movie, that's the kind of the one of the things in the movie that Einstein talks about, is that that it can never, you can never go back. It's there, and the world will never be the same. Yeah. That's definitely, I think, true and a good point. Another thing you could talk with kids about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also thought it was pretty intense when the mom and dad find Sparky, because there's this gang that find out about it, and Edgar tells the gang, and so then the mom and dad find out, and Sparky breaks that mirror and runs out of the house. Like, that was all pretty, I think, intense, well-animated scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then Victor, I just wanted my dog back. Oh, who can't relate to that? Oh, I've never even had
a
dog,
good
and
job
I feel
with
it.
With all his emotions, I guess. They did a really good job with that.
I thought it was funny with Elsa with her hat with all the candles. Praise be to New Holland.
That was a weird song. It almost sounded like it was supposed to be a commercial.
Yeah.
Some like affordable homes or whatever.
And Elsa is Winona, voiced by Winona Ryder. So really, I mean, Tim Burton was sort of bringing in his team, his greatest hits.
Yeah, I remember that Winona Ryder was in the movie, but for some reason I was thinking that she was the one who did the weird girl, but I wasn't seeing any proof of that, and that's why I started looking to figure out exactly who did her. Like, oh wait, Winona Ryder is the neighbor girl, and that's when I figured out who the weird girl was. Catherine O'Hara is so good.
Oh yeah, she's brilliant. And so then this is when we get the reanimating of the rat, we get the reanimating of the sea monsters, we get that homage to the kaiju. That was really fun.
And the teeny tiny mummy.
Yeah. there are monsters big and small all over the place, and everybody basically kind of wants Victor's help to try to fix this. And there's that kaiju turtle.
Yes.
Yeah. And the sea monsters attack the mayor.
Most of the stuff with them reminded me of the Gremlins, but the scene in the phone booth, was that supposed to be the birds?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I could see that.
I think they just hit all sorts of little references all over the place. I really thought when he ran into the porta potty, I thought that was going to end up being like a Jurassic Park reference. But then the sea monkeys came up, and then that threw that out the window. But then I thought maybe they were trying to merge a bunch of references with the phone booth, and maybe they were going for Jurassic Park with the turtle eating the phone booth.
Yeah, I think it was just like classic monster movies more than specifically Jurassic Park, but I could see that. And and so I loved the look of the fire and the other sort of visual effects during this because one of the cool things about stop motion is the way that you can create looks out of everyday objects, because you're dealing with this, you know, small version of whatever you're creating, these little worlds. So you can like create fire, you know, using a particular kind of paper, or, you know, like I love that part of the creativity of it. I mean, I especially love that in like Wes Anderson's stop motion, but they can literally kind of create, as long as it looks valid within the world, and it kind of inspires that memory of whatever it is that they're doing, they can be really creative with stop motion. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love when they use objects to represent other objects.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. And then you see the mom, she's saying, "That's my son in there." And Sparky runs in and saves Victor. And you have the mutant bat that drags Sparky.
Mr. Whiskers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because he used to be the cat, and then I don't know if he merged with the dead bat or what, but became something else. I think he was supposed to be a vampire reference, but he was still something else entirely.
Yeah. Well, and so then the bat gets speared by the fire, and then Sparky dies, and they try to bring him back to life with the cars, just like in the short. And then Victor says, "You'll always be in my heart." It's so sweet. Lovely.
I liked how they ended it. I'm curious, what do you think? Because I've heard a lot of people say that the dog should have stayed dead at the end. Did you like that they brought him back, or do you think he should have stayed dead? Because I don't know.
Do you think that he probably should have stayed dead? Because I think that is a good sort of teaching for kids.
That's kind of how I was thinking. I do like that he has a happy ending, but I do think it would have been a very poignant ending if he had stayed dead.
Yeah. All right. So I asked on Twitter what people thought of Frankenweenie. I said, what do you think of Frankenweenie? Do you think it's underrated? And I got a ton of responses, which is fun. Let's see here. Let me open everything. Allison Lewis says, I actually watched it. I'm not a fan of scary movies. And while I like Tim Burton, his movies can have a darker aspect to them, but maybe I'll try watching it this Halloween. Yes, you should, Allison. Riku Zegram says it's really well made, but as a pet owner, I don't know that I'd ever want to watch it again. So that's kind of, maybe that is part of the thing that it makes it hard for people to watch it. Is just losing a pet is tough. Cameron Ward says it's very underrated, probably Tim Burton's last well-received film, which is a shame, but that's what happens sometimes. I mean, it's certainly, I think, his strongest film in the 2000s, in my opinion. I would say then I would put Frankenweenie, and then I would probably say Big Fish and Sweeney Todd. I think I would probably say are his next strongest, but he's had a lot of clunkers that were not for me, that's for sure. So yeah, it's too bad. But the thing about Tim Burton is I just wish he would get back to telling his own stories. Here he's telling his own story
and do more stop motion. We need more people focusing on stop motion.
Yeah, do more stop motion and tell your own stories, because he's been adapting other people's stories for so long. And I guess the Wednesday series was really good. I didn't watch that, but for the most part, it's been a big fat failure for me, him telling other people's stories. His Planet of the Apes was terrible. I hated his Alice in Wonderland. I hated Miss Peregrine's Home. That movie was absolutely terrible. It's just not working for me, at least. And I just wish that he's such a creative person that I just wish that he would get back to telling his own stories. And you know, he still is getting work. So what do I know? Kevin the critic says it's fine, I enjoy it well enough, but for whatever reason it doesn't stick with me like other Burton films do or rewatches do. Screen Zealots Lisa, she says, I love it, especially the stop motion animation and a story that's a reminder of how our beloved animal companions enrich our lives even after they've gone. Spoonie TV says, I don't hear much about it anymore, which is a shame. I really enjoyed it, so I'm going with underrated. Let's see here. Lassie Voigt says, I like it. I think it's a fun expansion on the original. Matthew says, it's honestly one of my favorite Tim Burton movies. I even like it better than the short. Love the monster movie homages, and it has so much heart. And hey, it's an animated remake of something live action instead of vice versa, which is so true.
That's true. I didn't even think of that. We need more of that.
Yes, please, please. Edward James Lauder says, I think it's brilliant. One of Tim Burton's best movies. I love his animated stuff. So there we go. That is your thoughts on Frankenweenie. Let us know what you think in the comment section. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And I'm curious, Jonathan, have you ever thought about doing like a, in your every version ever, like doing a like Frankenstein or any of the horror properties? Or is that too out of the comfort zone?
I have definitely thought about it.
It'd be fun.
Problem is, I don't have time. There's so many stories that I want to do and I'm still doing.
Yeah.
That I don't know when I will get to. Like Frankenstein would probably be the first monster movie that I would get to.
I think you'd be pretty safe. Like even the movies in Frankenstein that are technically maybe rated R aren't like, like it's a pretty philosophic, pretty like, you know, about creating God, pretty, you know, man playing God and things. Like it's not a particularly sort of gory or bloody property compared to Dracula, you know, or some of these others.
And it's one of those that people do so many interesting takes on it. Like Frankenweenie is so different than the original. You'd have such a variety in it.
It's true, because you got like young Frankenstein with Mel Brooks, and you'd have a pretty good variety, as opposed to like, I mean, I felt bad for you doing Nutcracker. That was
oh,
rough.
that reminds me. I was going to tell you the neighbor. The neighbor was voiced by the lady who was the neighbor in the one Nutcracker that we talked about that we both really liked. The one with A Very Nutty Christmas, I think it was
Oh,
called.
really? Yeah.
Yeah, Conchita something. I can't remember her
Oh,
name,
okay.
but she voiced the neighbor.
Yeah.
I forgot I was going to
That
mention
one's
that.
good.
Just because it's something for you and me that we would know. Everybody else listening is probably going to be like, what?
Well, why don't you tell people, speaking of the podcast, why don't you tell people about what you do and where they can follow you?
Well, technically, I have four podcasts now. I feel like I barely have time to keep up with them. My main podcast is iHeart Movies. And then the podcast that I probably focus the most on right now is the Disney Movie Marathon, but also second, like kind of equally focus on every version ever, which is where the Frankenstein thing would come in, which basically is finding all sorts of different versions of the same story to talk about in a series of episodes. Right now we're in the middle of Cinderella.
Oh, nice.
And I just started, like officially started, iHeart Animation, which was a subsection on iHeart Movies. Now it's becoming its own podcast. Right now I'm just putting up like the old episodes from iHeart Movies onto the new podcast channel. But next year I'll start making new episodes specifically for iHeart Animation.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, we'll put all of that in the description. You all should definitely check it out. And you can follow the Talking Disney podcast at Disney Talking on Twitter. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. Also, make sure that you're following everything going on at Disney Scares Month. It's a lot of fun. It's my 8th year doing it, which is wild. So please check that out every week, every Saturday, post that. Including, and I do have a review of Frank and Weenie from a couple years ago. And also check out the Hallmarkies podcast. Got lots of fun stuff going on there. First weekend of Christmas movies was actually this weekend. So it's wild. It starts early in the world of Hallmarkies. And then we also, if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. That really helps a lot. And if you are watching on YouTube, please give the video a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. Appreciate that so much. We also have the patron group and merch store. We have some new holiday designs, so please take a look at that. And thanks so much. And thanks so much for filling in. I hope you enjoy your cruise to Australia, Stanford. And we'll see you all next month. Bye, everyone.
Bye.